Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I shoot my shot, I hit my goals. I let man act like they don't know. Check my record and learn that code. 187, that's Andrew Cole. Murder a beat, I'm cold. I link up with bro, that's I did it like Andrew Cole. I screw my thing, I don't need to talk. I shoot my shot, I hit my goals. I let man act like they don't know. Check man's record, I learned that code. 187, that's Andrew Cole. Murder a beat, I'm cold. When I link up with bro, that's I did it like Andrew Cole. I screw my thing, I don't need to. Middle with the field in check like skulls. But I still grind and chase man's goals. When I get a chance, man's veins get cold.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Mugger, Making United Great Again. We're on the road to recovery, I hope. I'm sitting in for Mariah. This is Michael Akidiri here. And it's just going to be a two-man pod today. I'm joined by the very enthusiastic Elijah. What's going on, my guy?
I really hate this football club, man.
You can't get excited, man. A nice little 2-0 win, clean sheet, 3 points. That ain't going to change the mood.
I would have rather us lost with that performance, quite frankly.
Woo! We'll get into it.
We'll
have to get into it. Obviously, thank you everyone for tuning in for another episode. Obviously, make sure you check out our Patreon. We're still putting out some sort of content on there. So if you want to get closer to Mugger and everything United, check us out on there. But without further ado, let's talk about Saturday's 2-0 win against Everton. We lined up with Andre Onana in goal, a mainstay for us in goal. At left back, we had Victor Lindelof, makeshift left back with our problems there. And then a centre-back pairing of Johnny Evans, 35-year-old Johnny Evans, and Rafa Varane, Champions League Varane, but we don't really hear that anymore, with Diego Dalot maintaining his position at right back. And then I don't know what formation you want to call it. Is it 4-4-2 diamond? Is it 4-3-3 with Bruno as the false nine? I don't know what you want to call it. But anyway, midfield, we had Casemiro, Kobbie Mainoo, Scott McTominay, and Bruno doing what Bruno does with Rashford off the left and Garnacho on the right. So, Elijah, what did you think about this lineup when this got announced early on Saturday?
Obviously, it was unchanged from the Man City game. So Lindelof managed to keep his spot after that fucking disaster class. And we still went on with the same formation with... It was less of like a 4-4-2 as it was last week, and more of like more pronounced 4-2-3-1. But obviously, that midfield three becomes a mess because of the way Ten Hag wants to set them up. So yeah, I was actually quite surprised by he kept the same lineup. But like every single week I just see the lineup and just think it's actually two things. I think this team is so fucking shit. Like, the quality in this team is so bad. It is so horrible. And secondly, I look at our bench and I just think, with all the injuries we have, the fact that Ten Hag has managed to make himself a talking point about how well his coaching and management is just a testament to how bad he's done this season. because quite frankly, we shouldn't even be looking to blame a manager with the amount of injuries we've had to contend with. And I know people say everyone has injuries, but I mean, we've had to deal with quite a lot this season. And yeah, it's been very difficult. But there comes a point where I'm just like, we are playing counter-attacking football against a relegation threatened team, and it doesn't matter who we face, as they can be as bad as anyone, we're going to concede shots on goal, and we're going to do it because of the way this man sets us up to play. And the Man City game turned me off him even more, because the fact that he has recognized three times a season where we've gone away to Arsenal, we've gone away to Liverpool, we've gone away to Man City, and he has set us up in a way where we are compact. We don't have much space between the lines, and we are actually able to reduce them to not much. Well, yeah, Man City aside, I believe that Arsenal and Liverpool, we were able to reduce them to not many big chances that we can. We still concede a lot of shots in possession, but the quality of chances wasn't that great. Against Man City, I feel like they were able to get between our lines a bit more, just because of the fact that Bruno and McTominay were doing that false nine shit, and it wasn't helping as much as it should have. But yeah, I mean, the fact that this is clearly a choice to be as bonkers in midfield, he actually just needs to go. So quite frankly, yeah, I mean, that's the two takeaways I took from the lineup. We're just in a terrible moment right now. So
would you have changed anything? So you spoke about the bench. We had Bayindir in goal. On the subs bench, I have to say, but Bayindir is the goalkeeper. Amrabat, Eriksen, Diallo, Anthony, Kambuala, who did come on, Toby Collier, Habib Ogunnenye, Dermot Lee. So any of those players stick out to you as someone that you would have started in place of the starting 11?
I mean, I personally would have started Ahmad, just because I believe, not even just as a like a personal thing, because I rate him, more so that I've seen him play as a false nine and he does better there. And he's the type of player he is as a false nine. He'll be able to connect play better. Then we can have Bruno in his natural position, and then Garnacho and Rashford out wide, so we will still have runners off the ball, and it takes McTominay out of the team, which is always a plus. And then I probably would have had Amrabat instead of Lindelof at left back, just in terms of his inversion, and then done that. But it's like I said, in terms of what the team can actually pick, he is really hamstrung with injuries, which I believe is also down to him as well, not just with the training, which apparently he plays.
Well, you think he's overloading them?
No, I just feel like off the back of the season we had last season, where we had so many games. Like, we saw it with Liverpool last season. They played 64 games, I believe 64 or 63 games. The next season, even with a proper preseason, they looked out on their feet, because it is difficult to play that amount of games. We played that amount of games in a tighter period because there was a World Cup in between. Absolutely. So we were literally playing every 3 days from September to April. Now, and this is with players who have jetted off to the World Cup. With a lot of players who jetted off to World Cup. By the way, we had the most players, I believe we had the most players that got to like the quarterfinals or semifinals as well. So a lot of players got deep in the competition. We're playing every 3 or 4 days. And then he was not rotating the team as well. There's a build-up of fatigue that has come, and then that can happen, and I understand that. But that plus with apparently his training and stuff, the players are going to look tired. And people are saying, like, these players look out on their feet, and then the work he has them doing on the pitch, the amount of space they have to cover is absolutely insane. So it's just a lot. Like, as much as I can sympathize with the injuries, it's not like I wasn't saying last season he needs to rotate as much as possible, because this will affect us long term, and it has. So even when I hear complaining about the injuries, he has played some part in that. And it's not just about the injuries, just the fatigue, and you can see it in the players' legs. Like, but yeah, I mean, there wasn't much you can do to 11 because of the amount of injuries, but I'm just not, even with the players out there, like,
it was a poor showing, and we can get into the first half now. We can start the first half. What did you sort of make of the sort of opening proceedings? Because from what I can remember, Everton were having most of the ball and in most threatening areas.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely bonkers the amount of shots we concede. Like, the thing is, this is not a new thing either. I mean, we weren't the best at stopping shots last season, but I feel like, I feel like, obviously, with a settled team who knew, like, the defence knew themselves better, we just conceded a lot less chances and we were better. But the amount of shots we conceded is absolutely ridiculous. And the thing is, like, I believe we conceded 22 shots against Everton on Saturday, but half of those were blocked. And that is a common theme with United under Ten Hag. Even though we do concede a lot of shots, we block a lot of those shots. And if you look at the amount of XG we've conceded from open play, from the amount of shots we conceded, it's not that much higher than like a Man City or I even think Man City's is probably higher in terms of their XG per shot. But the problem is, when you're conceded 333 shots from open play, by the way, second highest in the Premier League, and the amount of shots we concede from set plays is the highest in the Premier League, our work from set play is absolutely shocking. So in terms of both from set pieces and open play, we are just so easy to get shots off against. But it's both a bad and I guess it's a bad thing. Obviously, it's a bad thing. But the good thing is that we are not conceding. Like, these shots are just shots from like from they're either far away or
the range.
Local,
yeah.
But or their low quality chances. But still, the fact of the matter is, if you keep doing this, you're going to concede.
Absolutely.
And it's I don't understand. Like, he's just completely gone away from what he tried to do last season. And he's doing it with the wrong players, and he's doing it stupidly. I mean, the amount of time, how many times are they going to pass the ball to Casemiro and he Lenguan just anywhere first time?
What's up with his passing? Like, obviously, Madrid, it wasn't, maybe because he had players, Toni Kroos, I mean, one way, Modric the other way. Maybe it was a 5-yard pass he needed to put on that. That we didn't really have to talk about his passing. He's just about covering the ground. Maybe because he's not covering the ground as much now, there's more of a look on his passing. But he just kept on passing the ball back to Everton every time.
His passing is shocking. And the problem with him is that he does it first time. He has this. I think Reams. I remember Reams said it last season that Casemiro has a bit of Bruno about him in terms of the risk.
He's got the Bruno gene.
Yeah. But he also has it in the fact that first time, he will just try and do it first time. The most difficult pass first time. And it's just like, please, like, retaining possession is so important. But I also feel sorry for him because the spacing. First of all, why are we so wide from each other when we have the ball? Because when we inevitably lose it, the amount of space that they have to run back into is enormous. Like, on and off the ball is so contrasting, is absolutely ridiculous. Like, I just don't understand it one bit. Like, it's just bonkers to me. Like, I just don't get it. I really just don't get it. But yeah, the first 20-30 minutes, the passing was shocking. Varane, Evans gave it away. Obviously Casemiro. I can't remember if anyone else did, but like,
yeah, no, just those are the main culprits. Definitely Casemiro every time, and obviously he's losing it in dangerous areas. So they're pressing out the pitch. Everton were, but once we broke the press, from what I remember, it was a break. I think Rashford passed it to Garnacho on the left, and then Garnacho sort of drops the shoulder, cuts in, and Tarkowski sort of swipes his legs. First penalty And Bruno dispatches it. Did you have any doubt when Bruno picked up the ball for the penalty?
I did have a bit of a doubt. Maybe it came from my hate of him, but
the hate was too strong.
Yeah, man.
Taking over the logic.
Yeah. Congratulations to him. That's all I'll say on that. It was good work from Garnacho. It was from the left. He travelled all the way to the left, because I believe. Because I think he was the one who won the ball back initially.
Yeah, then. He won it in the centre of pitch. He won it in the centre of pitch and then started the attack on.
Yeah, so that was good from him. And then, I guess it was a good penalty from Bruno. But, we went ahead against the run of play, quite frankly, which is just really embarrassing to say. I mean, it's just, like, it's so terrifying that we're just this bad a team. They're so poorly coached.
If they had a shoot, obviously, they had the Tete up front.
Beto. Yeah, that's
Beto up front.
That's a Tete. Yeah, you're very confused, my guy.
Yeah. That's a whole different type of player. But no, they had Mama up front, and then obviously Dominic Calvert-Lewin, he's not had his shooting boots on either. So we rode the luck of the fact that they haven't got clinical finishes, because the game didn't really change. From even though we went 1-0 up, it was still the case of Everton having the ball, threatening, but not getting any sort of clinical, clear-cut sort of chances where we're like, oh. And then again, Garnacho makes a break, and it was Ben Godfrey, I believe, the second time, who sort of takes him out. And Bruno gives the ball to Rashford. Did that surprise you at all?
No, because he'd done it against Everton, I believe.
Well, the reverse fixture.
Did Bruno play that game, actually?
I'm going to look that up as you talk.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Didn't surprise me. He's done it before. I guess.
Are you confident in Rashford? Because obviously sometimes, you know, obviously, maybe people were saying, oh, maybe he's trying to give Rashford a goal, even though Rashford scored a scream against City. Maybe because he's not having the season we would have expected of him. Maybe it's a way of giving him a goal. I don't know if you would recommend that at 1-0 first half when we're not playing well.
Because even against Everton, if Bruno was playing, Rashford took the pen at 1-0. So it was quite interesting in the way in home fixture when we're 1-0 up, Bruno gives it to Rashford. But, for me, Rashford should be taking the penalties anyway, just so Bruno's not able to get out of these performances with scoring a pen.
Well, who do you think the better penalty taker? Surely that should be the only determining factor. We can't let agendas.
Yeah, I know, but that is why I'm a fan. I can let agendas rule my roost, quite frankly. So I'm happy about that. So he scored. It was a good penalty. The second half was actually kind of horrible. Both teams weren't good. It was a really low quality game.
Fizzled out.
Yeah, and to be fair, I guess that was simply because Everton stopped having quality because we were poor throughout the game. So that's another damning indictment of the fact that Everton stopping playing well is the reason why that game became a horrible watch. But yeah, that's life underneath this manager at the moment. So
the few players I wanted to pick out to pick your brains on. So Garnacho, there was talk of his final product. It was almost like the fact that Everton's defenders took him out to win those two penalties, took the decision away from him, and maybe the final product wouldn't have been good or good enough. And it's funny because it's a far contrast from what people were saying when he scored the wonder strike at Goodison Park. So what do you think about this chatter about Garnacho's end product? Obviously, albeit he's still only 19 years old.
Yeah, he's literally just 19 years old. He's a summer baby, I believe, but born in July. So he turns 20 in a few months. 19 years old. He's played 25 games in a row because of the stupidness of the other attackers, quite frankly. So he's a 19-year-old who's had to come into the team and perform, because quite frankly, there's more likelihood of getting a consistent performance out of him than anyone else. And this is a young boy who has an inconsistent final ball, but at least you know what you're going to get from him, which is absolutely bonkers to say, considering he's the youngest. It's just, to be honest, pretty prophetic on your Antonys, Bruno and Rashford. It's poor from them. So yeah, I feel like he gets a lot of undue hate. I believe that comes from two things: of obviously people with their agendas with certain players will turn against him, and also due to the fact that he was hyped a lot more than his ability. He is a good talent who could become a very good player. But yeah, even at United when he was brought in, I was reading an article in the Athletic today about him. They'd done a long read on him, and yeah, they said when they brought him in, they knew that he was not a generational talent. So if that is him, then people saying, "Ah, oh, he's this player, that player," people are gonna hype. When he doesn't perform to that level, people are gonna detract from him as well. So yeah. But yeah, he's a good talent. He shouldn't be playing as much as he is, and it just shows.
He's been thrust into the limelight, as you say, due to obviously the idiocy of some of the people he should be looking up to. He's seen.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I say, Garnacho and Mane. But to be honest, we've had this thing for how long now? We had it with Rashford and Martial. Now we have it with Garnacho and Mane. So it's just a bit like these aren't good environments for players long term. And I don't want what has happened to Rashford and Martial to happen to these two. But if we don't improve soon, it probably will, and then there will be more complaints about their progression and whatever. But yeah, he had a good game. He was a threat. That's all I ask of him at this point. And it's good that
man in the match as well.
It's good that he done it off the back of probably his worst performance for United against Man City. He was absolutely shocking, and there was a lot of hate about that. But I mean, like I said, he's a 19-year-old. He's going to be inconsistent. He has his flaws that he needs to do. He needs to edge out as a lot of young players do. So yeah, just I look forward to his journey rather than trying to obsess about what he is currently, and I suggest a lot of people should do the same.
Very well said. And another player whose journey that United fans are a bit more concerned about is a man who didn't make it onto the pitch against Everton, number 19, Ahmed Diallo. Those Eagle Eyes fans may have noticed that he has had a bit of a makeover when it comes to his social media profiles, removing any sort of links or pictures or content related to his employer, Manchester United. We can speculate why. Everyone's speculating that this may be due to a breakdown with his relationship with our manager, Erik ten Hag. Elijah, what have you made of these developments?
I mean, he still has the tweet up that he put up after the game with Garnacho and Mainoo, where they were listing the 10 players. So he still has that up. He's just changed his profile and his header. And on Instagram, he just removed some pictures or stuff like that. Me personally, look, it doesn't look good. I'm not particularly a fan of it, but obviously he is a young kid. He's had a very frustrating season. like that injury in, he had an amazing season championship, gets the preseason, he gets injured, he's out until Jan. Then he's had about, what, 2-3 appearances. Two of them were in losses, of course, not his fault.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been able to like score or like to do something to keep his place. Even if against the first game against Nottingham Forest, he done well when he came on. Against Fulham, he was okay. But he did look a bit lightweight. And then Nottingham Forest, he wasn't good either. But like I just said, he's been out injured from preseason. And he's just come back now. So I believe, of course, and that with the injury plus added pressure of knowing he has to perform and who he has to perform up against as well. It's difficult. It was always going to be an uphill battle, really. And I feel like just like that injury was so badly timed, because if he wasn't injured when the Sancho and Anthony thing happened in August, September, he might have gotten more of a chance. We saw with Hannibal, seen it with Kambuala, we've seen it with Mainoo, even though Mainoo seemed more earmarked to make an impression this season. So yeah, I mean, we're not privy to what we see in training. But yeah, it's just a kid who's frustrated. Of course, we could all say that's not the way to go. But look, he's frustrated.
He's still young, 21, 22 in July. We just hope it's not a talent that we're losing, because...
He should go. I would rather see him go and prosper elsewhere than stay at
You don't mind Ahmad going?
I do mind, but at the end of the day, I want him. I don't think he's going to get a chance at United, because even now, we say he has competition for places. We're still looking for a right winger. It's gonna be virtually impossible for him.
Do you think he's been given a fair chance?
I mean, look, the thing is, when it's hard to get a fair chance when you're at a club at United the way it is now, because when you're a big club that is struggling, it takes a brave manager to, even though I don't understand why you should be brave, because I feel like it's the easiest thing in the world, because I believe playing academy players will just get you more patience, because they are younger players, so they will have to grow. But obviously, when your job's on the line, you start to think about the short term, and that's what happens at United. You've seen it with Oli. He went out to sign Sancho, even though he said that he's present on the left, but he was signed to play on the right. So Ahmad had to contend with that. Then he has to contend with the fact that Anthony signed. And now even Palestri as well. It's just, you can just see there's a lack of planning, but that lack of planning comes from a mishmash of the managers we've had, different thoughts in the hierarchy and things like that. So it's difficult. And to me, it doesn't say anything about the talent of him, as we've seen with multiple players before. We've seen it with Kevin De Bruyne, we've seen it with Salah. Angel Gomez right now, they're doing very well with Lille, and multiple other players. Just because you don't get a chance here doesn't mean you can't get a chance elsewhere. It's just a difficult circumstance, and it kind of needs things to fall into place, and it has for Garnacho, and it hasn't for Ahmad, and that's just the rubber to green that Garnacho has been able to have. I feel like it's just an unfortunate situation. But yeah, it's unfortunate that we're gonna lose Ahmad, because Ten Hag is too embarrassed to realize that he had a better player than the one he went out to sign for 86 million. So he has to make it work.
Obviously, we, as you rightly said, we can only sort of speculate without any sort of definitive statements from the club. But you think removing the club from your social media is tantamount to leaving in the summer? You think that means it's done?
I don't know, because obviously the hierarchy can say to him, look, the manager's probably not going to be here. A new manager can come in and whatever. But how often do we see that? A new manager's going to come in and you still don't get that chance.
Van de Beek's a perfect example.
I mean, that one was so obvious. Like, it was because he's just not good. So I believe, am I taking that risk again? It's a lot, because it's been what? It's been Oli. Like, it's been very unfortunate, because even the season before last, he was about to go out on loan, then he got injured.
Yeah.
So he wasn't able to go out on loan for the first half of the season. Then he goes out on loan the second half of the season, goes to Rangers, does well in his first game. Second game, they play against Celtic. They get smashed up 3-0 first half. He gets dragged off. After that, he's not able to get back in the team, because that's how these things work. I don't like it, but that's how these things work. And then he goes to Sunderland. That was amazing.
That's the championship alight.
Yeah, he won. I believe he won. Did he win player of the season? I can't remember. No, he didn't win player of the season, because Juba Akpom didn't. He won young player of the season, I believe. But yeah, so he goes and does that. Then he comes back, and he gets injured. Then he comes back and he's not really been able to get a chance. He's had 27 minutes since Jan, which, look, it's not good. But then again, we've not had the privilege of playing in the Europa League, so maybe he would have been able to get some minutes there. But we stanked that much that we finished bottom of our Champions League group. So it's a bit unfortunate, but that's life. If it's here or elsewhere, I just hope he gets to play and show how talented he is at the level he deserves.
I hope. Well, you explained it very well, but it's just frustrating how young talents as a club. What do we want to do? Do we want to be going down the route we were sort of a decade ago, where we were buying the Angel Di Maria, sort of the ready-made sort of players, or do you want to buy a younger player and nurture them and stuff like that? Well, and it seems that we don't know which way we want to play it. The ready-made players are too expensive. They come on big contracts. Then that's not good. But then we buy young talent and we're not able to nurture them correctly. So what are we doing? What is the game plan?
It's a bit funny, because I was even thinking today, like, with the reports that Varane will probably leave at the end of the season. We want rid of Casemiro. I've just been thinking, like, as much as I really like them players, because they do show their quality. Like, obviously, Casemiro has been horrendous since this time last year. But I do feel like that's a consequence of a multitude of factors that include the manager's tactics and just the amount of fatigue he's built up. But also with Varane as well, like, when they have shown that when they're on the top level, they are very good players for us. But the problem is that we need that for a longer period of time. We need that consistently. And they're at an age where they can't do that. Varane is quite injury prone. So I understand why United are turning around and saying, for 350k a week, for someone who is probably going to give us 22 games a season, it's a lot. It is.
Yeah, of course.
It's a lot. So I understand it. But we're putting ourselves in that position where for some reason, not just United internally, the fans as well have just thought, ready-made, get this 28, 29, or proven quality. How many successful teams have you seen built like that? The best teams, absolutely. They get they get them in between a good range, a good mix. You rarely ever see a team built where they're signing 28, 29 consistently.
No, never.
That's not sustainable. So it's a problem where United have just tried to buy their way out of it and they've been silly. There's been no cohesion or congruence with any of the signings, and it's just been poor. And the problem is that if you sign the guys like Casemiro and Varane and Ronaldo, they have to win right now, but you don't have the quality behind them to win right now. So what's the point? And that's the problem with this type of signing. And then if you sign these young players, you need a steady club, because as much as people say, you can have a development plan as much as you want, as soon as it gets to the first team, that is the head coach's decision. The development system of Man United has no bearing, or the quality of the development system in Man United has no bearing on how many get into the first team. Because if the first team manager doesn't care, then matter at all. So I just feel like they're not doing enough, where they are taking care of these players, of these younger players, and they're trying to sign these ready-made players, but they have no one in that middle group between like the ages of 22 to 27 who are actually good. They don't sign. We've not signed good players in that age range. We barely do. Like, if you think about it.
I was thinking about Anthony, but I guess he was 21 when he came, wasn't he?
So yeah, he was, but he's shit anyway, so that doesn't even count. I'm saying good players, who have you signed between that age range?
Because that's basically Arsenal's model. Obviously, I know we don't like to talk about other pods here, but if we're going to talk about a club which has taken itself from the periphery of the Champions League places to challenging for the title, Arsenal's the best example of that. And they definitely pride themselves in buying players of that age range. What, Declan Rice, 23, 24. Kai Havertz, 24, I believe, when they purchased him. To be fair, they have bought a few older players. You know, Jorginho, that was only 12 million.
But you see, those aren't the main crux of their team.
They're auxiliary players
to come in. But even if you go back to look at Liverpool, when they signed Salah,
24,
Mane, Alisson, absolutely. Fabinho, Robertson, Chamberlain, Wijnaldum, Firmino. There's a reason why, you need to sign players in that age range between 23 to 27, then you're able to give the younger players like breathing space, and you don't need to sign as many ready-made world-class older players that are 29, 30 just to try and chase something. Like, the problem is that in that area, we our signings fucking suck. I'm trying to think probably who. What? Fred, Pogba, Lukaku are the only ones who've signed 23, 27. Who else? Lindelof, I believe.
I think we got Lindelof, young Eric
Bailly.
I think he was about
Eric Bailly, Van der Beek, who just is fucking shit. Bruno.
I guess Bruno's probably the last one of that sort of ilk. In that age range, who's actually got on, and there's resale value. I think that's the problem. A lot of the when of course, if we're buying a player from Real Madrid, they're coming to the end of their sort of peak period or their world-class period and whatnot. So we're going to pay top dollar and obviously have to pay them a supermax sort of contract, a crazy contract on a crazy amount. And we're going to get them at the tail end of the late 20s. That's just the deal. That's just the deal you're going to get. Whereas the funny thing was, we bought Casemiro because they were making room for Tchouaméni, for Camavinga. Yeah. Players that we were probably rumoured to be looking at. But of course, we're going to lose out to Real Madrid because they're looking at, as you say, they're refreshing the midfield with people, young 20s, internationals, who are going to give them that 5, 6, 7, 8 year longevity. And we just can't compete with those clubs right now when it comes to signing players, because you know, would you rather go to the European champions, 14-time winners, or would you rather go to Man United, where we're very much still living off past glories? And it's good that you mentioned Liverpool, because those are our opponents this coming Sunday in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Liverpool just coming off a very heartfelt draw against the champions Manchester City at Anfield. A game I watched, a game where, you know, if Luis Diaz has his shooting boots on, could have been easily Liverpool.
He never win. Does, so it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope he doesn't have them on against us, man.
Just because I said that, he is now, so
he may score, he may go bang a hat trick. But Liverpool, obviously, Liverpool had a lot of injuries. We have a lot of injuries. But one thing you have to say is that Liverpool still play in Klopp's image, regardless of the team's the actual individual personnel on the pitch. He's definitely got he's got them playing to a style, and everyone fits into that style. It's not that a player is missing and then the style crumbles. It seems that with us, if Lissandro is missing, then
yeah, I mean, but that. I mean, to be fair, comparing to Klopp is a bit harsh on Ten Hag just because he's been there a long time. But then again,
Look at Postecoglou then.
No, but I was even going to stay on Klopp. I can go back to 15-16 when he just came in midway through the season. Yeah. Immediately, you saw his style of play. He had been there 3 weeks and he faced Spurs's Pochettino's Spurs, who were the best pressers in the league at that point, and they went press for press, and it was a 0-0 game, but you could see immediately. And then I believe 2 weeks later they went away to Chelsea, a bad Chelsea admittedly, and absolutely stomped them into the ground. And even though he had the teething issues, like the loss against Watford, the 3-0, and things like that, there was an identity there from the jump, and he continued with it. Even the next season when they had the injury problems around Jan and Feb and December, they still played the same way. The season after, when they had that poor start and they got boxed off the pitch by Tottenham in the 4-1 in November, even before Van Dijk came, they had improved defensively and they still kept to their style of play. This is the reason why I said last season it was more important to establish a philosophy than any result for me. I could have taken any position in the top half, because I'm not that much of a loser. But any position in the top half, as long as I could see we were playing to a style and we were progressing with that, I would have been fine. I was able to take it because
even the 4-0 at Brentford, even the, was it 2-1 at home to Reading, was it 3-1? I can't remember now.
No, for me, I did not like that because he was being too naive for me. It's like, as much as you can have a style, just don't be too stupid. Like, people talk about Postecoglou being, to me, he's not being stupid. Like, the high line against Chelsea and whatever, that's a once in a lifetime situation where you're down to 9 men. I don't care about that. To me, he was just being dumb. But at least with all these managers, they come in, even if they have teething issues, they have a style of play. Even last season, I said, as much as, look, we're defending well, we're winning games, I wasn't too happy because I think it was even when it got to like Feb, I didn't realize how many games we had won since like November to like Feb, where I was like, fucking hell. Like, I should be much happier with the results that we are getting than I am right now. But I wasn't too happy because I was like, it's not great to watch. We're really relying on Rashford and cool. But I said, you know what? He's doing something where he's implementing mentality. And at that stage, I was as pissed off with how mentally weak the players were, with how we play. And then the 7-0 rolls around and it's just capitulated from there. And now I look at the players like losers and I look at the manager like a loser. And the problem is that I look at other teams and I'm like, this is why managers keep trying to cheat the process at Man United. I really hate it. Just stick to the process. Like fam.
Do you think it's the pressure though? Do you think it's the need for immediate results and the scrutiny and the pressure?
From where?
Because it must be all the managers, and we've had some very good managers. We've had managers who've won the Premier League come in to our club and sort of succumb to the need just to do whatever it takes to win results at the sacrifice of their own philosophies of football, you know? So what's in the water in Manchester? What's happening?
I think I just think it's so stupid to me. I think for me, all you need to do is please the fans and get the players on board, and that is it. As much as the noise about the results and stuff like that, if you get them on board, if they can see something long term, they will get behind it. That is the crux of anything. As a manager, you just need to convince the players and fans that if you pull in the same direction as me, we will be successful. These managers think they can do that, but just by getting results. It doesn't fly. It is short-term thinking. And that is why they're always out of this job. Like, to be fair, Van Gaal, he was very stubborn, but I also hate him as a person. So I count him out. But it's just, I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. It's just, it's always short-term thinking. It's always basic thinking. It's just poor. Ten Hag has just been really poor. And I believe outside of, like, yeah, he's been very disappointing simply because how tactically poor he is. I've known for a long time about his lack of rotation and his in-game management not being the best. But he tactically has shown himself to just be a very bang average manager. And on top of that, he's very stubborn. And that's just a horrible mix. So, yeah. But yeah, the Liverpool game, I don't care. I mean, even if he wins
FA Cup, with an FA Cup, with fifth and FA Cup, obviously looking unlikely. It's looking very likely that'll be six. So let's be realistic. A six and an FA Cup win. How would you rate that season?
Yeah. I think I said before, as soon as the final whistle blows at Brighton, I want him sacked. That doesn't change if our final game.
So all eyes on the Amex on the 19th of May.
Yeah, I mean, even if the 25th of May, I believe, we're playing the FA Cup final and we win. I hope it's the same thing as Van Gaal. I would actually like it the same as Van Gaal, where it's even leaked to him in the press conference that he's going to lose his job.
You really want this?
Just to make his
favorite. You really done with this guy?
I'm sorry. Yeah, he's been so poor this season. He's been so poor this season. It's been absolutely ridiculous. And yeah, nothing can save him. I don't even want him to get a second chance to redeem himself.
You don't want to be like, you know, good. You say good. Would you rate first season good?
Yes. Good. Like I said, 6.5 just because he bought Anthony.
Okay, 6.5. Yeah. 6.5 season, first season. Obviously, this season way below expectation. But you wouldn't want to give him the start of the third season just to be sure. Absolutely. Would you rather just wipe the slate clean and give a new manager?
Absolutely not. The thing is, I don't even care who's coming in to replace him, whatever. I just want him gone. Like he has to go, and he has to go just because I don't want his incompetency to go unpunished. His head needs to roll for this season. Like that is simply it. I want him gone because he has been that bad, and I'm all about meritocracy. Merits getting sacked at the end of the season. So I hope he does. And that's it. But yeah, if he wins the FA Cup, if he beats Liverpool, that's fantastic. I could never turn down a Liverpool win, but that won't take my eyes off the bigger picture of that him and
you'll
the
be swayed.
Is, yeah, it's not.
You'll,
it's not
you'll just be at the Stretford End chanting. You'll just be yeah. like, nah. The
league. I mean, of course. Like I say, it's great to be a hypocrite. So you know, I can want him out, and I know the only way he gets out is to lose more games. But at the end of the day, if we win, I'm gonna be happy. So it's fine. But yeah, him and a lot of these players, like 9% of these players, need to go. So I just want, yeah, I want Carrington to look like a ghost town before you make some signings in the next summer, really.
Absolutely hilarious. That's absolutely hilarious. We did a big boo-boo and didn't ask our listeners. No, we did. Sorry. I lied. Let's get into some listeners' questions now. Hopefully there's some positivity here for us. Let's go for Fight for MUFC. Would you like to see a new stadium or a redevelopment, and why?
It's a difficult. The problem is with a redevelopment is that we would have to move. We would have to move and play our game somewhere else. Where, I'm not sure, but that's
can't really... share with the Etihad.
I don't think so, mate.
Hey, man, be like Inter and AC for a season or two.
I mean, Barada can try and bring that up and say,
guys, man, old boys.
He was
long time no speak. What's going on?
He was like, could I ask the same favor as before, brother? But the problem is that, like, United are probably the most reliant on match day outside of Spurs in the Premier League. So if our match day goes down, that's a really cut into our revenue. We build a new stadium, we can still play games at Old Trafford because it will be adjacent to it. So we can still play games at Old Trafford. And then once that's done, we can move and our revenue doesn't really go down. Obviously, the thing is just the history of Old Trafford. That's where we've played not since our inception, but we've played there for a very, very long time. It'll be sad to see it go, because that's like, as much as the stadium stinks and it's rotten and everything, it's a nice historical place. The amount of history there, from even before the Busby Babes, just from the original owner, who his original vision was about bringing in youth players and what to do and things like that. I think it's amazing, and that's the type of things that you love about a football club. So having to let go of that would be sad, but in these times, we just have to think what would be the best course of action. A new stadium would be nice, but how that is funded is going to be a problem, because as much as Jim Ratcliffe is trying to implore the government to put some money into the stadium, even if you do get that help, we're still going to need more. Still probably going to be a loan. United's relationship with loans is not the greatest right now with Glazers. So even if it is a loan and it is tacked on to INEOS rather than the club, it's still a lot of investment that would probably need to be repaid. So that's the difficulty of it. In an ideal world, I would love for Old Trafford just to be redeveloped, as you can see with Camp Nou and
Bernabeu as well.
The Bernabeu as well, and even the way Liverpool have done it, but their one is a bit more long term in terms of they've been improving themselves stand by stand. I would love for it to be redeveloped, but I believe, just in terms of finances, it probably balances better if we build a new stadium, just so we don't decrease our revenue, and that lack of decrease in revenue will probably offset against how much the loans and everything that we pay from our own money, I guess. So yeah.
What seat capacity? Obviously, Old Trafford, what, 76?
76, so... I believe they want to make it 90.
Woo!
90, so that...
Well, just on a bit bigger than Wembley, or they want it to be on par with Wembley?
Yeah, I mean, they say they want it to be the Wembley of the North, which I don't care about. I don't. I mean, yeah.
It's all about taxing, though, isn't it? That's all that.
No,
is.
Like I guess obviously, if it's a great new stadium, you'll be able to host things like United have not been able, like they've not been able to put their name in the hat for a European final because it's not a listing on UEFA, and so we've not been able to host anything since like 2003. So like. And like even the Euros that's happening in a few years, they didn't even put up Old Trafford for consideration because it fucking stinks. So yeah, man.
All right, okay. All right, 90,000 new stadium. Let's see. Who would you Swift Army Knife Pope Sweezus? Who would you sign to pair with Kobe in the summer? This is assuming, I guess, that Casemiro has moved on and we sort of reduce our wage bill with some of the higher earners. So if Casemiro is moved on in the summer, is there any player that you've seen across Europe or beyond that sort of piques your interest?
I mean, the type of player Kobe is, I would like him as an as that conduit between the attacking midfield with his carrying, with his passing, with his brilliant press resistance. So I'll ideally look for an athletic six who is still able, who's still competent on the ball. That profile, I'm not sure. A lot of people speaking about Onana, I'm not too enamored with him. I'm not too enamored with him at all.
Has he played the six or four? Is it Idrissa Gueye that played that three with him and Abdoulaye?
Yeah, so right now it's like right now they're playing Ghana and Onana as a two, which I don't really like. Yeah, I don't really like them two together. They're saying him as a six. I wouldn't be too happy.
Maybe I'm just relying on. I know he's very athletic, but I would thought more box to box. I thought when he came, that was his more of his thing.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, he's a bit versatile because he played as a 10 at Lille versus Chelsea. That was the first game I saw him in, and I said, "Who is this centre back playing as a number 10?" He was fucking awful. And then in the second leg, he came on at centre back, I believe, and then yeah. He's a strange player. He can look like he's quite neat on the ball sometimes, but yeah, I'm not sure about him at a higher level. In terms of my knowledge of sixes now, I've not been really looking, so I'll probably have to do more. But we've been linked with Moreno today again. He's more like a deep lining playmaker. Obviously, he was at Newcastle. As in terms of sixes, I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure. I would have to have a look around, really.
A deeper look. Okay, and last, we can't go through all the questions, but one question that Lloyd ZDZ sent in, and it's quite poignant. When will we be happy again?
Yeah, because I believe those saw someone else you asked, do you remember when it used to be good?
Yeah, that was Mike Fat Nine.
I had 2 months of happiness in lockdown. I saw that video on the timeline of all our goals during lockdown.
Hey, fam, man.
We were hey, almost Martial, there.
Martial, Rashford, and Voldemort.
Mm-hmm. Fam, we were almost there. We were literally almost there, and we still managed to fuck it up. And look, when did the Oli interview come out?
He left
No, but I mean, when did the Oli interview, the one with Gary Neville and Keane?
Oh, overlap. Oh, that was less than a week ago.
Yeah, fam. I could not watch it because I knew they weren't going to ask him, why did you not sign a number six for 3 years?
Obviously they're boys, man. They're going to ask the hard questions, are they? No, they it's going to be all cozy.
No, I couldn't believe it. I watched that team. Man,
you're going to stick it on him like that? Come on, that's an ambush.
To be fair, in terms of a number six, there is Fofana at Monaco, who is decent. He's like a six or eight, and he's well-rounded. But yeah, the reason why I'll be happy
just
with him.
He's turned 25, obviously, looking at.
Yeah, he's just turned 25. He's done decent. He played with Tchouaméni. They had an amazing partnership to together. That, I believe, it was like 21, 22, or the season before, where they had an incredible partnership.
He's Tchouaméni got the move and he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Tchouaméni was the better one, to be fair. But Fofana, I believe in the second season, he had quite a difficult time with form and injuries. So I believe that also played a part to it. But yeah, he's decent. I believe he has a year left in his contract. Decent pickup for like 25 million. He rejected the move to Nottingham Forest because he said, if I'm going to leave Monaco, it's not going to be to a team like that. So I already like his mentality.
Yeah.
I really like his mentality. Yeah,
I like, appreciate it, but you know.
Just off the top of my head, that's it. In terms of when we'll be happy again, yeah, there's hopefully Ratcliffe, Berada, Ashworth, and all the goons that are coming. Hopefully, they actually do something because I am tired. I can't do Saturday every single week. I can't do it. I have to because I have to write for those games, but I can't do it.
You're not doing it with pleasure. You're doing it because it's business.
I'm trying to keep it as short as possible. So sorry, Scott. I'm admitting it now. I'm in it now. Nah, that Saturday game was, oh my god, horrible. It's
difficult watch, man.
Yeah,
difficult watch. But we continue. We move. We've got Liverpool on the weekend, FA Cup, and then we've got a couple weeks break for the internationals, and then we're back with a game against Brentford. You know, we're six in the league now. Of the top four is looking very, very, very unlikely with 10 games to go, but you never know. You never know. In fact, I do know it's not happening. But I wanted to leave with some sort of positivity, so let's just leave it on. You never know. 10 games, 30 points to be had. Games against Liverpool and Arsenal and Chelsea still in the league. So, you know, it's a difficult running, but, you know, you have to believe. In Erik ten Hag, we...
Don't believe.
But that's been another episode of Mugga. Thank you, people, for tuning in. Elijah, thank you for your time, your insight, and your expertise. Hopefully, you're a bit more positive the next time we link up.
I won't be. I'm telling you now.
Elijah's going to drink his sorrows. I'm going to hopefully maintain some level of positivity. But till next time, take care and peace, people.
Peace.
I shoot my shot, I hit my goals. I let man act like they don't know. Check my record and learn that code. 187, that's Andrew Cole. Murder a beat, I'm cold. I link up with bro, that's. I did it like Andrew Cole, I just do my thing, I don't need to talk. I shoot my shot, I hit my goals, I let man act like they don't know. Check man's record, I learned that code. 187, that's Andrew Cole. Murder a beat, I'm cold. When I link up with bro, that's cool. I did it like Andrew Cole, I just do my thing, I don't need to. Middle with the field in check like scores. But I still grind and chase man's goals. When I get a chance, man's veins get cold.
Sports Social Podcast Network.